This truth, which never came about, was never said to have been really taught. It is taught in the form of a metaphor, transcending sounds and terms or words. It cannot be taught for what it really is. Classic expression of emptiness, like the kinds of descriptions of emptiness that we would see in an Indian text. But they're also running through Burn texts like a strange undercurrent is a sense of opposition and hostility toward the Buddhist tradition, expressed in another text translated by Snellgrove and Richardson. Text says this: King Trisong Detsen, that king, he is a roguish fellow. His ministers are monstrous rogues. Our blazing light is now withdrawn. Now is the time of these Buddhist monks. The princes now have faith in gold, and our haloed burn declines. May that king, that Trisong Detsen, become a village beggar, and may his ministers become shepherds. May the land of Tibet break into pieces and these Buddhist monks lose their law. May these nuns bear children and these Buddhist priests lead fighting gangs. May their monasteries be filled with battle. May their temples be set on fire. And may my curse become effective. And may these books of mine be found by someone worthy. This is a strong and vindictive curse of the Buddhist tradition. It's found in the classic tradition of Burn. Now, in spite of these ancient curses, the Burn has now so thoroughly accommodated itself to Buddhist practices, and did so actually many centuries ago, that for many scholars, the Burn tradition is viewed as really nothing more than another variety of Buddhism. You can certainly approach it that way, even though it makes very strong claims to represent the indigenous tradition of Tibet and presents itself in many respects as a tradition in opposition to Buddhism. Now, you might ask one more question in talking about Burn and in talking about this early phase in the history of Buddhism in Tibet. What is it like these days to encounter a practitioner of the Burn tradition? Now, I would not normally pose a question like that. I don't know very many Burnpos, and I haven't made much of an effort to seek them out. But I do have one rather remarkable story to tell you that might give you a little bit of the flavor, not just of the power of the tradition, but also about how it incorporates Buddhist ideas. Once when I was sitting in my office at Boston University, I got a call from a fellow who said that he had a visiting Burnpo, visiting from India, he was traveling around and speaking in universities. This man wondered whether I would like to have the Burnpo come and visit my classes. I said, sure, that'd be a great idea. It's not often that you get a chance to have a visiting black magician from Tibet come and address your class. So we set a day, and I waited for the fellow to come. And on that day, strangely enough, I'm actually not making this up. This may sound a little odd, but it actually did happen quite this way. That was the day of what's called the perfect storm, that great destructive storm that came in New England on Halloween, spun backwards down the New England coast and caused a tremendous amount of destruction. On that day, the wind blowing, the rain pouring into my office swept this red-robed Burn priest. We talked a bit. We then went over to my classroom, and he sat down and gave a very calm and quiet account of the Burn tradition that sounded an awful lot like Buddhism. He said, if you want to practice the Burn, have compassion on your neighbor, and also at the same time study emptiness, and you will in that way proceed to awakening. Then, as the windows were rattling and the rain was beating down outside, my students had a chance to ask him some questions. And they said, well, how was it you happened to become a Burnpo? How did you choose to enter this form of religious life? And he said, well, you know, my daddy used to be a great magician, And he would leave the body during the night and travel around Tibet. And when he came home for breakfast, he would tell us stories about all the things he saw. And I wanted to be a magician just like my daddy. The students' jaws dropped a little bit, and another person asked another question. Well, what happened to your daddy? Whatever became of him? And this Benpo said very quietly, well, you know, one day he said to us that he needed to do an important meditation and we should lock the door to his meditation room and not disturb him for a week. During that week, there were meteor showers and there were strange comets and all that sort of thing. And at the end of the week, we opened up the door and there was nothing left of my father but a pile of hair and fingernails. And at this point, the students in the classroom, I probably was among the group, actually, their jaws dropped. The window frames rattled. The rain was pouring down outside. And I felt, for a moment anyway, that I had been transported into that remarkable and strange world of the Bön tradition. About the veracity of his story, I certainly cannot say much, although the claim he was making about his father is a very traditional claim about some form of Tibetan practitioners. But I was grateful to him for having introduced me into that world of the Bön tradition in such a powerful way.